Rock the Lakefront June 13th and 14th as Racine Harbor Fest returns for two unforgettable days of live music, mouthwatering food, and nonstop fun. Advance tickets $8, VIP tickets still available online at racineharborfest.com.
It'll depend, he says, on whether Tehran is willing to give up on nukes. His spokeswoman, Caroline Leavitt.
It is a fact, and the United States government maintains this fact, that Iran has never been closer to obtaining a nuclear weapon.
A federal appeals court's given the go-ahead for the president to maintain control over National Guard troops in L.A. Loyola Law's Lori Levinson.
The real question is what's going to happen next, because things very much have calmed down in Los Angeles.
A potentially record-breaking heat wave is spreading out from Midwest to East. Meteorologist Craig Allen.
The problem I see with this is it's a large heat dome that's going to go right on into next week from the Midwest to the East Coast. So in other words, it's going to be a prolonged event.
Heat index expected to climb to 102 in Washington, D.C. Sunday. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. More big returns are expected at the box office this weekend, and there's a little something for everyone. If you're looking for something in a nice post-apocalyptic shade, check out the latest from the 28 Days franchise called 28 Years Later. The film is highly anticipated as original director Danny Boyle is back at the helm. Pixar's new film Elio also opens this weekend. It's the story about a space fanatic who tries to make connections with alien life forms to overcome an intergalactic crisis. That sounds even ambitious for a movie character. Elio is a nice family film rated PG, and for what it's worth, PG movies are crushing this summer. Elio is pulling in a very respectable 86% on the tomato meter. And finally, if you're in the mood for what appears to be a terrible movie, check out Bride Hard, starring Rebel Wilson and Anna Camp. Just about 10 reviews in, and Bride Hard is pulling low 20 percentile. Mercenaries take a wedding party hostage, not knowing the maid of honor is a secret agent. I see where this is headed. Let's go to the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Pacers beat the Thunder. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports basketball. The Pacers dominated the Thunder last night in Indianapolis, 108-91, to tie up the NBA Finals at three games apiece. Oshkosh, Wisconsin's Tyrese Halliburton from the Pacers on Sunday night in Oklahoma City. It'll be the first time there's been a Game 7 in the Finals in 9 years.
You know, for the next couple days, the narratives are going to be almost poison, you know, to talk about what this would mean to our city and legacy talk, and we played so well.
Baseball tonight, the Brewers opening a three-game series against the Twins at Target Field. The Crew with a dramatic 8-7 win over the Cubs in Chicago yesterday, despite some very questionable balls and strike calls by the home plate umpire against the Brewers' Abner Uribe and Trevor McGill.
Pretty bad calls there in Abner's inning and in my inning. Yeah, I mean, that's baseball, I guess. I mean, they're going to have bad days back there, too.
That's Brewers closer Trevor McGill with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
When Republicans try to be cute, they always end up looking like Wile E. Coyote in the old cartoons. Governor Evers is the Roadrunner, and his veto pen is the Acme anvil that keeps getting dropped on their heads. If what they want to do over the next few weeks is not pass a state budget, it would be best for them to get one of those tiny cartoon umbrellas to guard against another Acme anvil that voters are going to drop on their heads.
Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area will be here to recap all of the week's news. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Brandon Bormans. A spotty shower possible this morning, otherwise partly sunny and warm with highs in the lower 80s. Partly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight with lows near 70. Hot and humid this weekend. Definitely find ways to stay cool. Highs in the mid-90s. Right now, it's 66 degrees.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Quinn Hurley to discuss the Green Bay Tattoo Festival. Chris Ruckdoshel joins me to talk about Muskie Fest in Hayward, and Terry Barr is back from vacation for Bar Band Friday. Let's light it up.
Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Hello, Friday. Where have you been all week? Come on in, everybody. It's the fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yonke. It is a Friday, and this is the Midwest Farm Report. Now, while we're looking forward to the weekend, we are going to have to exercise some extra attention on the weather through the course of the weekend and how you deal with it. For today, showers and thunderstorms are probably going to happen this morning. Daytime highs, 84 degrees once those showers move through. New rainfall amounts probably less than a tenth of an inch, but again, some areas might pick up more. Tomorrow is where everybody is focused. It's going to be hot. It's going to be sunny. Tomorrow, daytime highs, 93, with heat index values as high as 101. We're also going to have gusty winds tomorrow out of the southwest, 20 up to 35 miles an hour. For Sunday, still hot and sunny, 93. Monday, another chance of showers in the forecast, but still, daytime highs on Monday expected to be around 92 degrees. Stumacher Ag Meteorologist has all the weather details you're looking for in about 15 minutes. And we start off on a Friday morning thinking about weather and its ultimate impact on humans. You know, it's been just a little over a month ago since a EF2 tornado struck the Dodge County community of Juneau. Unfortunately, those tornadoes were kind of a direct hit on a couple different dairies in that area. I caught up with some of the veterinarians that were called out to do triage after the storm had passed. That's the one message I want to leave you with this morning. When severe weather occurs, many people deal with the incident in 24 hours' time. If you're a dairy farm that's impacted by severe weather, the ramifications and how you deal with it may last weeks, if not months, beyond. Monty Belmer can tell you all about it. He is a large animal practicing veterinarian with Waupun Veterinary Services, and he was one of the first responders that headed to the dairy farm once the tornado had passed. And although Monty has been a practicing veterinarian with other severe weather incidents, he says everyone's unique. Everyone leaves you with an impression.
Our first reaction is, boy, look what's happened. It's kind of a little bit of a shock. And especially because I was on that farm just the day before working with the owner. But you go in there, and then the first thing you have to do is there's going to be a number of people there that want to help, and you have to just kind of rally the troops and get someone to start leading and start trying to figure out what you got to do with all the cattle.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something I think people assume. You Google it, or there's a website or something like that. If only it was that simple.
Yeah, there's no training for this kind of stuff. I mean, there's some people will have disaster trainings, but nothing that we see. And so the scope is usually big, and so you get there, and it's just assessing the situation and quickly deciding what you need to do.
Some of the questions, what are the first questions that you have to start asking either the owner or the people that are trying to help direct?
Well, the first thing is, you know, where do you have an idea where you want your cattle to go? Most of the time the owners are in a little bit of shock, so they really don't know. So then you need some people that kind of have an idea where these cattle might be able to go. We're lucky that we've had some local farmers that are really good at knowing a lot of people to where these cattle can go. A lot of us vets have ideas where they might be able to go. Once that happens, then you have to start kind of figuring out the logistics of who's going to haul them. There's always a lot of volunteers to haul cattle. So those that are eligible to be moved, we make sure they get moved to the farm. So once we locate the places they're going to go, we get the livestock haulers to start loading them, give them directions where they're going to go. And then after that, it's try to get the place cleaned up a little bit.
Well, you paint it much more simply than it was, because those animals come with requirements. It's not just feed and water, milking schedules. Some are pregnant, some are not. I mean, there's more than just the cattle that's got to move. There's the information that's got to move.
Yeah, that's correct. So what happens is, I mean, In today's dairy world, we have a lot of management system records. And so then what we do is we go ahead and have to make sure someone has to be responsible to get those records transferred to the farm that they're going to. We have to make sure that the milk is saleable that goes into the tank that the farms are going to. The farm that they're going to needs to know, you know, the age of the animal, the ID, to be able to get them into the milking systems. And so one of us has to be responsible for helping get those records transferred over. So normally, luckily, they go to a lot of the farms that we know, and so we can kind of help get those records transferred over.
Well, and you know, the industry is small. Although it's large, it's small. You said the evening that this event occurred, that's the other thing, is it's not like it was during business hours. When did it happen, Monty? I forget when the storm came through and when we finally started figuring out some time was happening.
Yeah, it was somewhere around that 6 o'clock, 6:30 range, I think, when it hit, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And then we send out a mass text message to all our veterinarians, and then they respond in kind. And so then we rush to the scene as fast as we can get there legally. Mm-hmm. And so we get there, and then once we get there, then all the vets kind of talk, kind of like who's going to do what, and what do we got to do. And then we meet with the owner, or we meet with a person that might be acting in charge at the time. Mm-hmm. And kind of start deciding what we're going to do and kind of go from there.
And there are other professionals that are there. This is not a one-person decision-making process. You alluded to milk habits, software. You don't think about those kinds of collaborations, but you said milk processors were there too.
Oh, yeah. We see a lot of the representatives of the milk processing plants are usually there helping. You'll have just a slew of people coming to help. It's great to see the amount of volunteers that show up to help at these disasters. And so you'll have everybody from the feed companies will be there. You'll have the milk processing people will be there to kind of see where the milk is going to go and how we get it there.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about what happens after. We were talking about the initial triage of the animals, who's ambulatory and can get to another farm, who needs immediate attention, things like that. But it doesn't end that night. Tell me about the next 24 hours and what your veterinarian crew were doing.
Yeah, so usually for the next 24 to 72 hours, we're usually putting eyes on cattle. Dr. Molly was there going around looking at cattle for the next, 3 days probably. And so we go and we re-examine the animals. We make sure we got eyes on them to make sure they're not further injured. So any swellings that might happen or something from a previous injury the night before. And we check them all out. We have to document that all for not only the owner but for insurance purposes. So we have to make sure that is always in documentation.
Is there... They talk about storm damage now. So a barn fire looks different than a tornado, looks different than a windstorm. Did you notice any unique type of damage either to the buildings or to the animals themselves this time around, Monty?
No, nothing more unusual than we've seen in other windstorms. It's usually going to be some blunt force trauma or some cut, you know, from flying steel and debris. And so that's what we dealt with that night mostly is either lacerations from flying steel or blunt force trauma from like a roof collapsing on them. And so we have to deal with those kind of injuries, slips and falls. Animals might injure their limbs, you know, when they fall trying to get away from the storm.
Now, if you were a hospital, you have systems, gurneys, things like that. You're under a compromised pole shed trying to do some of this work. Did you folks practice for this? Do you do exercises on this, Monty?
No, there's no exercises on this. I think we've been through enough of them now that we kind of understand what has to be done. And so first it's, you know, making sure the animals are stable. Those that can be moved off-site, we get moved off-site. Those that have to be triaged and worked on, we work on them. And then there's some that we have to humanely euthanize that they're injured too badly.
Right, right. Now, everybody's going to say that cow that showed up was impaled with a 2x4, and she's standing there. When does that shock wear off, and did she survive?
That one was at a different farm. And so we're not sure on that one, you know, end story of her was. But, you know, the adrenaline kicks in animals just like it does humans. You know, humans get into accidents and they don't really feel the pain at first. And they'll stand there with a 2x4 embedded into their side or a piece of steel in them. And they're really just in a little bit of shock like we would be. So then you triage them, you get that repaired. They'll start to feel the stuff the next day,
right,
just like we would.
Okay, and then Now, it's an animal. It's not a person. Nope. But you do have access to prescriptions. How do you handle them post like that? Minimizing inflammatory, you know, if they're bruised up. And what does the animal, let's say it's a milking, a lactating cow, will she continue to milk, or does that shock carry through on the milk system too?
Yeah, it just depends how hard they're injured. Most cattle, they're very stoic animals, so most animal will come through perfectly fine. Yeah, they'll be down in milk for maybe a few days because we've moved them to a different facility, different feed. They've been on a trailer ride. But most of them don't hardly miss a beat. Wow. You know, and those that are injured, of course, will be down in milk because of the injury and things like that.
Right. From this incident, how many head were you dealing with, and how many head ultimately had to be euthanized?
I think total was about six euthanized on the adult side and another six on the young stock side.
Total head?
And total head was several hundred.
Okay. All right. Well, and again, like we said, trying to find a home for that many animals at 7 o'clock at night when there were other things going on in people's lives, not necessarily. And explain to people, people are going to say, well, but Monty, there's barns everywhere in Wisconsin. I drive past them all the time. Help them understand what has to click through your mind despite the facility.
Yeah. So most facilities that we see as we drive down the road, the little, you know, pretty hip roof barn sitting there, is not functional anymore to put a Holstein dairy cow in, or a Jersey for that matter. And so we have to get them to a facility that's a working dairy barn. Most working dairy barns are very full of cattle already, so there's not a lot of room. So you have to find the people that can accept it. Most farmers will find spots for, you know, 30, 40, 50 cattle. We were lucky that enough to that night to have a couple farms that could each take 100 and something cows that night, and another farm took another 20, 30 cows. So we were able to, at least on the milking side, then we had several people take dry cows. Mm-hmm. And so I think we moved probably all toll probably 300, 350 that night. We moved off site.
Yeah, just think about that, trying to move a couple hundred head of livestock immediately after a severe weather event. Monty Belmer was there. He is a large animal practicing veterinarian for more than 30 years with the Waupun Vet Service. And he also reminds people, don't take anything for granted. He said just being able to find space in available barns for all 300-plus head of dairy cattle, a blessing. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Voting Rights Lab reports there were 59 state bills introduced on proof of citizenship for voter registration this year, and 160 bills concerning voter ID. A handful have made it near the finish line, but not all have passed. Since President Donald Trump's baseless accusations of mail-in voting fraud in 2020 and his unfounded claims of widespread non-citizen voting in the 2024 election, Republican-dominated legislatures have raced to pass stricter voter ID and proof of citizenship laws, despite no widespread abuse of either. In New Hampshire, versions of SB 218 were advanced, requiring submission of ID and proof of citizenship for absentee registration, and are now in a committee of conference. In Texas, a high-priority documentary proof of citizenship bill died without action at the end of the session. In Texas alone, there were 15 bills introduced to provide documentary proof of citizenship and 10 tightening voter ID laws. Nevada Governor Joe Lombardo surprisingly vetoed a bipartisan voter ID bill attempting to codify a widely supported ballot initiative. Democrats negotiated expanded ballot drop boxes in exchange for supporting voter ID. His veto statement said the bill did not address implementing voter ID for mail-in ballots. Wyoming and Indiana passed proof of citizenship earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll continue to follow the happenings in the news, and our old friend Brady Ewing, former Badger and NFL player, will be here to discuss NIL. Is it making people soft? Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Football reports, because we've got a few. Butch from Alto, another tenth of an inch yesterday. Mark on the west side of Madison, Fitchburg, ended up with about 1.4 as of yesterday. Valders, 0.8, and it was still raining there this morning. Stan, about 6 tenths by Green Bay, 2 tenths by Tay-Cheeta. So there are still some showers hanging on out there, huh?
There are some around. I see Plymouth over here in Sheboygan County, 8,200 of an inch. And my friend John at Armstrong, a quarter on the dot.
Okay, well, so the rain is likely going to move through, what, pretty early this morning, and then the heat follows, huh?
The heat follows. Northern Wisconsin keeps some rain chance tonight, maybe even early tomorrow. There's a band of rainfall from eastern Wisconsin, Manitowoc, Two Rivers, on through Appleton, Green Bay, Wausau, and back up into northwest Wisconsin. More rain down around La Crosse into southeast Minnesota, northeast Iowa as well. So we all still have some chance. There's a front stretched from the Dakotas through Minnesota, central Wisconsin, into lower Michigan. That front will march north as a warm front, but is going to keep some rain chance in northern Wisconsin, like I've said, later today, tonight, even early tomorrow in the far north. In the south, we start to dry out. The heat does turn on. Man, there's stuff all over. There's a heat advisory covering a good part of Wisconsin from noon tomorrow till 7 p.m. Monday. That ends a little earlier, 9 p.m. Sunday in western Wisconsin. There's extreme heat warnings far northwest and southwest Wisconsin, southeast and northwest Wisconsin, the extreme heat warning that starts noon Saturday, runs into Sunday and Monday. Very hot weather. We are going to talk about temperatures pushing the upper 80s and 90s in the south, add a strong southwest breeze to that, and the humidity and the heat index is going to push up to 100 or over. That's the time where it's pretty darn stressful if you're going to be out and about. And unfortunately, I know dairy breakfast this weekend. We're going to have to hydrate and be very careful. I'll have forecast details right after this.
If you're interested in a rewarding career with a strong Wisconsin company, Rural Mutual Insurance is looking to add to their growing team of successful employees and agents. Apply online today at ruralmutual.com/careers.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Hey, got yield? The Wisconsin Soybean Association is excited to announce the 2025 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. Highlighting the innovative production practices of Wisconsin soybean growers, the Yield Contest celebrates soybean growers across the state and their dedication to improving their operations. Two winners will be selected from four geographical divisions, with additional awards available. Entry forms must be postmarked by August 31st, so don't wait. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
About that yield contest later this morning. All right, Stu, let's talk about the weather. Yes, we know the heat is coming. It's going to be with us all weekend long, but I still want folks to get out there to that dairy breakfast activity.
Yep, just take it easy. Find some shade if you can. You know, hydrate, keep yourself cool. Of course, the heat advisory, the extreme heat warnings, and we expect some rain, scattered showers, could be a thunderstorm almost anywhere in Wisconsin for a time this morning. Some redevelopment late afternoon and evening in the farther north part of the state. Temps today, upper 70s north, almost mid-80s in the south. In the south winds 5 to 15, gusting to 25. Still some rain chance in the far north tonight, clearing out in the south. And there's a difference then. We'll be in the low 70s in the south, still in the 60s in the north. And then there's Saturday, the heat kicking in, sunny, hot. Still some rain chance in the very far north early Saturday. Otherwise, sunny, hot. Otherwise, Southern Wisconsin up into the low 90s, very upper 80s or almost 90 in the north. Southwest winds gusting to 20, 30, 35 miles per hour Saturday. Sunny, hot, and humid on Sunday. And those temps again, Pam, almost everywhere around 90 or in the low 90s with the southwest breeze gusting to 25. The breeze may help, but it's going to be hot.
Yeah, and we knew it was coming. All right, Stu, have a good weekend. Thanks, buddy.
All right, see ya.
Stu Muck, Ag Meteorologist, with your Compure Financial Ag Weather Update. Find out more about Compure Financial, compure.com.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation, 540 WAUK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, where Maggie sat down with economist Benga Agyilor, talking about what the impacts will be to rural health care with the current budget bill working its way through Washington.
Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the health care that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
What's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal, is that they're cutting, you know, as you said, it's a massive amount, probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, you know, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, you know, spending money on health, then that's gonna, you know, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals. As the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And, you know, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and, you know, up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
So if a woman is having a baby, what is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her.
You've been listening to a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, which airs across the Civic Media Radio Network weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Find the full broadcast lineup at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
CBS News Brief. President Trump says he'll decide within 2 weeks whether the U.S. will carry out a strike on Iran. It'll depend, he says, on whether Tehran is willing to give up on nukes. His spokeswoman, Caroline Levitt.
It is a fact, and the United States government maintains this fact, that Iran has never been closer to obtaining a nuclear weapon.
A federal appeals court's given the go-ahead for the president to maintain control over National Guard troops in L.A. Loyola Law's Lori Levinson.
The real question is what's going to happen next, because things very much have calmed down in Los Angeles.
A potentially record-breaking heat wave is spreading out from Midwest to East. Meteorologist Craig Allen.
The problem I see with this is it's a large heat dome that's going to go right on into next week from the Midwest to the East Coast. So in other words, it's going to be a prolonged event.
Heat index expected to climb to 102 in Washington, D.C. Sunday. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The Pacers beat the Thunder. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Basketball. The Pacers dominated the Thunder last night in Indianapolis, 108-91, to tie up the NBA Finals at three games apiece. Oshkosh, Wisconsin's Tyrese Halliburton from the Pacers on Sunday night in Oklahoma City. It'll be the first time there's been a Game 7 in the Finals in 9 years.
You know, for the next couple days, the narratives are going to be almost poison, you know, to talk about what this would mean to our city and legacy talk, and we played so well.
Baseball tonight, the Brewers opening a three-game series against the Twins at Target Field. The crew with a dramatic 8-7 win over the Cubs in Chicago yesterday, despite some very questionable balls and strike calls by the home plate umpire against the Brewers' Abner Uribe and Trevor McGill.
Pretty bad calls there in Abner's inning and in my inning. Yeah, I mean, that's baseball, I guess. I mean, they're going to have bad days back there, too.
That's Brewers closer Trevor McGill with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, a new report on how the Trump tax giveaway could cost Wisconsin hospitals up to $4 billion over the next decade. Some won't survive.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Hi, meteorologist Brandon Bormans. A spotty shower possible this morning, otherwise partly sunny and warm with highs in the lower 80s. Partly cloudy, warm and muggy tonight with lows near 70. Hot and humid this weekend. Definitely find ways to stay cool. Highs in the mid-90s. Current temperature, 67 degrees.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important. And it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a conversation from a recent episode of the Busted Pencils podcast, talking about how AI or artificial intelligence is being utilized in rural classrooms.
I mean, really, I think it was reading so many of these books, like educational, like more theory-based books. It's like we gotta put theory into action. So it was kind of like a happen chance where we stumbled across, you know, Khan Academy with their Khanmigo, like their AI tutor bot. There's a lot more like technology sources like embedding AI into them. So we started to look at what would be the capabilities of a classroom if we let some of the tier one instruction be turned over to AI. So where students are actually receiving learning. I mean, as adults, if I want to learn how to change a faucet, I go and watch a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Kids, this generation of kids, they want to learn via technology. They want to learn via videos. And so, I mean, I think it was just like this perfect storm of like students being disengaged, you know, I was an instructional coach and associate principal. I've sat through my fair share of lessons that I, as the adult, was bored. So it's like all these problems of practice that we were trying to like find a way to solve. And it's like, well, we have something right in our hands. And so what would it look like if we could turn over some of that tier one instruction to a tutor bot or to personalized learning via an online platform and let the teachers do the depth of knowledge and challenge-based learning and really bringing in those real world connections.
Tell us, you know, rural Wisconsin. So this is happening then in rural Wisconsin.
It's happening. I mean, we have schools that are, I mean, we started off as like a little pilot, and now it's like, I feel like every day it's like, what's going on? Like, what is going on? And in this idea of rethinking or rebuilding like public education, I think each district that we work with kind of faces their own problem of practice. We have a district that couldn't really hire a physics teacher. So they, how can they take a teacher that has no physics background and use AI to truly help teach the kids? We have districts who are like, you know what? No, we're going to teach math, science, ELA, all the content. We're going to teach that, and we're going to reduce that time down so the kids get it all.
You've been listening to a portion of the Busted Pencils podcast. To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to our website, civicmedia.us/shows.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
I'm going to go yes.
It may be a little early to start estimating what the yields of 2025 are going to look like, but plenty of Wisconsin farmers are talking about it. Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke. We're talking about it this morning as well with Dr. Sean Conley, University Extension Soybean Specialist. Right now, the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board encouraging growers to think about entering the annual yield contest. Obviously, it's not something you know right now, but getting involved with the program pays all kinds of benefits. I'm talking with Sean before we wrap it up on a Friday. So glad you're along with us again. Everybody's been talking about it. Let's exercise a lot of caution if you're headed out to June dairy events or festivals this weekend. Tomorrow's daytime highs with heat indexes into the 100-degree mark. So do exercise caution. Today is the 20th day of June. What can I tell you? On this day back in 1963, the red telephone was instituted. Now, if you stop and think about cell phone technology today, probably hard to get their arms around this for younger generations. But the red telephone was literally a red telephone that was a hotline between the United States and the Soviet Union. They put it together after the Cuban Missile Crisis. And contrary to popular belief, communications between the two superpowers occurred via teletype or fax. And today, we'd call that email. But they put the red telephone in effect on this day back in 1963. On this day, 1975, the film Jaws is premiered. And aren't we still living with that? The iconic music, Steven Spielberg's thriller about a rogue great white shark terrorizing a summer resort town. Often considered one of the greatest films of all time, Jaws premieres on this day back in 1975. Happy birthdays today to singer-songwriter Lionel Richie. He is 76. Actor John Goodman turns 73 today. And Nicole Kidman, she is 58 years young today. And now you know. We know that a lot of college kids are back at home as of this Friday morning. Some just left the UW-Madison campus. Stephanie Hoff made a trip down to campus yesterday to catch up with some rural scholars. She explains.
About 30 students from seven rural Wisconsin towns are heading home this week from the UW-Madison College of Agricultural and Life Sciences Rural Scholars Program. These high schoolers spent the last 4 days getting acquainted with the agriculture campus and college living. Before the program, most of these students didn't think a four-year university was in the cards for them. Now, they'll be applying to UW-Madison. Rural Scholars Program Director Tanya Cutsforth tells us more about how CALS is reaching out to rural communities with the message that college is possible for you.
So this program is part of the Rural Partnerships Institute, which is a USDA-funded program that is designed to help improve livability in rural communities. So the focus of Wisconsin Rural Scholars is to provide students from rural communities access to pre-college planning and being able to see what it's like to be a college student and really connect with the folks who are doing research and outreach on this campus, as well as undergraduate students who are, you know, they're kind of near future peers, to learn about what college is like so they can see the possibilities that exist for them, not only on this college, but on this campus, but at college kind of writ large.
What's the age group?
So this program is cool. We have rising juniors and seniors in high school, but we've also invited their teachers to come along. So we have teacher chaperones from seven rural Wisconsin school districts, and then we have 26 students from those districts also participating at the junior and senior level.
And then give us a sense of the geography. Where are they coming from, and where is maybe the furthest destination?
So our furthest group, I believe, is from Seymour, Wisconsin. Okay, we got seven. So we got Seymour, Wisconsin, Waterford, Sauk Prairie, Wisconsin Dells, Mayville, Nisida, and Nakusa.
Are you targeting students that wouldn't consider college otherwise? Like, what's the goal here?
Yeah, so it's a mix. We kind of gave the teachers and leadership in the districts some autonomy to think about, like, this idea of, like, which students in your schools would benefit most from this experience. And it's been really cool to see how the districts interpreted that sort of that mission and challenge. But what we've heard from students is a lot of them said at the beginning of this program, I didn't see myself going to college, or I definitely didn't think I was going to go to a four-year college. And then after this experience, not only do I think a four-year college could be good for me, but this place is a place I want to really pursue. And that just, like, gives me goosebumps every time I hear a student say that.
Jania, it sounds like your recruitment efforts then are paying off. Can you give us a sense of what exactly they're learning while they're on campus?
Yeah, so it's a mix of seeing what's going on in our college and what college campuses do. So, you know, a lot of that distills down to the Wisconsin idea that there's research and outreach missions and academic programs that are training, like, the future leaders in our state and world. So introducing them to that concept and then showing them how does that all come off and how does it impact things that might be happening in your communities. But then the other part of it is really about giving them pre-college skills. So understanding how does financial aid work? What should you be thinking about with admissions and applying to college and writing an essay? What is it like to actually be a college student? And essentially giving them the toolkit for college and seeing what we do, seeing this as part of the Wisconsin idea, that pre-college prep, that's a skill we're giving students, and whether they land at our campus, which we really hope they do, we're so excited to have them, or if they land somewhere else, that they can parlay the skills that they've learned about college planning to whatever their next step is.
Well, and let's be honest, if you're from a rural community like I was, UW-Madison can be intimidating. So they have a chance to get acquainted with the campus. Did you change any minds about maybe how daunting living in the city is?
Yeah, one of the students last night said to me right before our bonfire, like, I feel like this place is maybe friendlier than my own hometown is. Like, I'm walking around and people look at me and smile, and I feel like I could be part of this place. And I mean, I think a large part of that comes from the community lift and community effort to make this program happen. I was trying to quantify the number of folks involved, probably upwards of 100 people who directly or indirectly had some level of involvement, including many undergrads, lots of faculty.
Tanya Cutsforth along with us. She's the director for the Rural Scholars Program, an effort to reach out to rural students about the possibility of college. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
Wisconsin's dairy farmers are more than just producers of milk and cheese. They're dedicated caretakers of the land, animals, and communities that they call home. Tina Peterson, Director of Wisconsin Communications for Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, explains the essential role that these farmers play and how we can all take part in supporting them.
So we know our Wisconsin dairy farmers have a really long history of caring for their land and water, mostly because these are multi-generational farms, but they also take really great care in making sure they're taking care of their cows and their families and farms and communities. So there's a lot on a farmer's plate, but they are such a vital, important role in their communities. And we encourage consumers to really engage with our dairy farmers, ask them the questions they have, and then they can support dairy farmers by buying products made from our Wisconsin milk. And that's very easy to do in the store. You can go to any retailer and look for products that have the Proudly Wisconsin cheese or Proudly Wisconsin dairy badge.
To learn more about how you can support Wisconsin's dairy industry, visit wisconsindairy.com.
Back in action in Chicago and on Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average overnight looks like it's down about 100 points. Our grain trade's a little mixed. Right now, July corn's up a penny. December new crop up two at 446. July soybeans are up three. November new crop up three and a half at 1072. July wheat, that's down a nickel right now, 569 a bushel. The July class 3 milk that goes into cheese, that's down 3 at 1765 a hundredweight. August, 1817 a hundredweight, that's down 3. Keeping the emphasis on dairy, another jam-packed June Dairy Weekend coming your way, and regardless of the weather, We hope that you are going to attend some of these June Dairy events starting tomorrow mid-morning with the Columbia County Moo Day Brunch. That's at Jazzy Jersey's, the Endres family, welcoming you out in Lodi. Tomorrow also a Sheboygan County Breakfast on the Farm. You want to see dairy technology taking care of cattle? Go to Double Dutch Dairy in Cedar Grove. That's the site for the Sheboygan County Breakfast on the Farm tomorrow. Winnebago County's got their Grilled Cheese Day tomorrow, and it's Dairy Days at the Sun Prairie Farmers Market as well. Sunday, Fond du Lac County invites you to their Breakfast on the Farm. That's going to be at the Pollock Dairy, and that's just outside of Van Dyne. Want to find out more? WisconsinDairy.org will get you there. WisconsinDairy.org. It's a little early to know what we've got as far as yields for 2025, but already farmers being encouraged to think about a yield contest. We're talking about that next with Dr. Sean Connolly, University Extension soybean specialist. Stick around.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Environmental groups say the Midwest grid operator, MISO, is pushing an emergency energy plan that discriminates against wind and solar, the two cheapest ways to produce energy in our state. The plan favors fast-tracking construction of gas-burning power plants at the expense of clean energy projects. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission rejected a similar plan from MISO last month, but environmental groups say this one is even worse, with few guardrails to ensure fossil fuel projects are actually needed. Once again, Wisconsin had the biggest wild turkey season in North America. More than 50,000 wild turkeys were harvested in our state this spring. The Department of Natural Resources reintroduced the birds into our ecosystem in 1976 and has been managing the hunt ever since. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Front seat, just this one time. Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
We'll talk with former Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen about his bipartisan effort with the Democracy Defense Project.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker, Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to Milwaukee's Real News and Great Conversation. 540 WAUK.
RG. In studio with us, Dr. Sean Connolly, University Extension soybean specialist. One area we really would like growers to slow down and think about right now is the 2025 annual yield contest. This is something that has continued to grow in popularity, Sean, and it really points out how soybeans, like corn, are becoming a consistent crop everywhere in the state. That was not always the case a couple decades ago.
Yeah, it's crazy, Pam. If you think back to like the 90s, which wasn't, I guess, that long ago. I mean, from us gray-haired people that are sitting around here talking about it. You know, at that point, we only had a couple hundred thousand acres in the state of Wisconsin. And now we've grown. The most we've seen since I've been here was a couple years ago. There was like almost 2.3 million acres. Now we're just under 2 million acres. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, commodity pricing and blah, blah, blah. You all know why or when you plant soybeans. But it's been an exciting growth. And I think over the last 10 years, soybean has gone from this poverty crop type of mentality to people investing in the crop. And I think with that growth, we've seen farmers really dig into looking at ways to maximize their soybean yield and looking at different, you know, inputs to increase the return on investment. So it's been a lot of fun to be part of that growth period and to have farmers really, you know, dig into soybean because, you know, anybody can grow corn, Pam, but it takes a real scientist and a real farmer to grow soybeans.
Of course. He did that just to make sure that you're going to coolbean.info to give him feedback on his own personal site with information and some insights on previous yield results that Wisconsin's generated. You know, that's the other thing about the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board and the yield contest, Sean, is we are now putting together a string of information that not only shows trend as far as yields, but it also helps you guys take a deeper look at practices.
Yeah, the great thing about, you know, working with farmers in this yield contest, Pam, is that, you know, I can't do all the experiments for every single product out there. There's lots of biologicals, there's lots of inputs, and, you know, farmers get together. They're, you know, the greatest innovators. They're always looking at things, trying new things. And what I learned just as much from them as hopefully they do for me in understanding, you know, what works and what doesn't. A lot of times you go to Corn Soy Expo, they're like, oh, this really worked well for me. Or, Sean, that was garbage. Don't even think about trying to that. Right. And, you know, the farmers get together, they chat about it. And what I really think that when we have these farmers that enter the yield contest, you know, they're recognized, they win the yield contest. But then they begin to do that peer, that mentor conversation. They teach each other. They learn, obviously. You know, you hold back a few of the family secrets, you know, but, you know, you always help your neighbor out, especially as we have new innovations come in. And, you know, as we're going into, you know, cover crops, I think the best thing you can do is talk to your neighbor, talk to farmers that have been working with cover crops. That's a huge learning curve, kind of like no-till was a few years ago for farmers.
Yeah, and we have layers and layers of those practices that are now in place, and we're encouraging you to get involved with the 2025 Wisconsin Yield Contest. Again, wisoybean.org can get you started with some of the links. Dr. Sean Conley is the one that kind of oversees that program implementation and then evaluation, and we do want to remind them if you need a more incentive than just the pure information exchange, there is money on the line.
Right. For the first place winners, it's $1,000. For second place, it's $500. But then we also have some of these other categories. One of the ones I really like are the newcomer category, if you will. Again, you come into a yield contest, you're playing with some different rules. You maybe, you know, maybe not quite at the top of your game, but you're still kind of learning. It gives you an opportunity to be recognized for coming in and maybe competing against someone that's been doing it for 15 plus years. The other part that I really like is a planting green category. We've been really trying to promote cover crops and, you know, the benefits of cover crops in the state of Wisconsin. Obviously, there's some challenges and risks associated with implementing any type of a management practice in. But we recognize those farmers that, you know, work on planting green into cover crops, and mainly at cereal rye in Wisconsin. And, you know, that's a good area of growth. And again, there's opportunities to learn. And I think last year, the individuals that planted green were still in the mid-80s, so that's nothing to scoff about.
No. Well, and don't be deterred by what you're looking at today in your fields. I mean, that's the other thing that Sean loves to say. You know, you get to Corn Soy Expo and somebody will say, well, I did better than that. Well, you got to enter to win. Don't be led into a false idea about what yield's going to be just by looking at a field today.
Right, because, you know, how many times you walked into a soybean field, Pam, or myself, and like, oh, that's going to be 100 bushel beans, and it's 40. Or you've walked into a soybean field, and you think it's going to be 40, and it's 100. That's the thing, and that's why I always tell farmers, you know, I'm really good at guesstimating soybean yield. It's 100 bushels, plus or minus 100 bushels, and I'm 100% every time. Mm-hmm.
And what is the application deadline for growers that are going to be involved?
The application deadline is August 31st. It's a very simple application. We've tried to simplify it. You know, talk to your seeds people. There's incentives for them to be able to work with you to be able to enter this. And we've really tried to streamline the process in order to collect the data. Again, we still want to have a rigid contest to make sure that it's fair and it's up and up. But I think it's a fair opportunity. It's a good opportunity to, you know, test your skills. And, you know, last year we had a husband and spout wife competition, and she won by, I think, 0.2 bushels per acre per year. So I'm guessing they'll probably be backing it this year. And I do know we have an FFA chapter in southern Wisconsin that is working with one of our Wisconsin Soybean Association members, Matt Rayberg. And they're going to be having a contest for, you know, they're working with this as part of their one of their activities through FFA, but I've been encouraging them to enter it into the contest. You know, you'd be a new contestant. Go ahead and enter it. I think it'd be a lot of fun, and you know, try to encourage other groups across the state to have, you know, we get enough encouragement from high school FFAs, we'll just crank out a new category next year and have that as an award winning. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're not only gaining insight into your own fields, you're gaining a network of insights with other growers that participate. 2025 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest, now looking for your entries. Seedsman, again, you should be encouraging some of those growers you know have good practices to get involved as well. You can get started and just be mindful of that August 31st deadline for application. WISoybean.org can get you started. WISoybean.org or Dr. Conley's website as well. Coolbean.info. Either way, you can get connected and participate in the 2025 Yield Contest. We'll see all of you with the results at the Wisconsin Corn Soy Expo 2026. For the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board, I'm Pam Yonke.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us now.
3 in 4 people have no idea that the hospital I work at in northern Minnesota will likely close if this big, beautiful bill passes, as will the hospital in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. So it is incumbent upon us to have these conversations with each other, not in a hostile way, but in a genuine way about our values and the things that we deeply care about.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
The strawberries we enjoy today have some history. That's next on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health Campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers.
The strawberry breeding program started at 1910. It was told to me, and I have not found anybody that can dispute it. It is considered the longest continuously running strawberry breeding program in the world.
That's research geneticist Kim Lewers from the USDA Agricultural Research Service operation in Beltsville, Maryland.
You can grow things in your backyard. They can grow wild in the woods, but it's not really an industry until they can be harvested and then shipped for market. And one of the problems with the early strawberries and wild strawberries, if you've ever had them, is that they're very tender. And almost as soon as you touch them, you've got juice on your fingers, which is kind of fun when you're picking wild fruit in the woods, but not so great when you want to have them ready for a store.
Lewers says strawberry breeders at USDA have worked for decades to develop today's varieties, even dodging a serious threat in the 1950s.
There was a disease that came around, and it nearly devastated the industry. And my predecessor, George Darrow, was aware of the disease. Basically, he, in advance, saved a newborn industry by creating disease-resistant strawberries. And we've been focusing on that ever since.
That's Farm to Fork. I'm Darrell Anderson.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'll be joined by Civic Media's political editor and creator of the Recombobulation Area, Dan Schaefer, to discuss the state of the state's budget. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers.
Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce. Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. President Trump says he'll decide within 2 weeks whether to carry out a strike on Iran. Foreign ministers of the UK, France, and Germany are meeting with their Iranian counterpart today. The BBC's Imogene Fuchs.
They are hoping to de-escalate and try and find a way where Israel and Iran can calm things down, stop bombing each other, and then get back to the negotiating table with the United States.
An appeals court rules President Trump may remain in control over California's National Guard after sending troops into L.A. to monitor anti-ICE demonstrators. Loyola Law's Lori Levinson.
In this particular circumstance, the Ninth Circuit said that under the statute, a great deal of deference must be given to the president.
In London, singer Chris Brown showed up at court and pleaded not guilty to beating a music producer with a bottle at a nightclub in 2023. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.